Longhorn Nation. He's going for the corner. He's got it. Texas is the foot kicker. The kicker comes through.
We're back. Welcome back to another episode of Fire Tom Herman, your totally sane and entirely reasonable Texas Longhorns football fan podcast. I'm your host Josh, here with Noah, and we are finally, thankfully, nearing the end of this complete train wreck that has been the 2019 football season. Texas got absolutely smacked by Baylor in what, if not for a late score, would have been the worst loss by points margin of the Tom Herman era, and I mean, it still felt like the worst loss of the Tom Herman era, just in terms of the lack of competitiveness, I think, that we saw out of the team, especially on the offense. But the only other game that even sort of comes to mind as being in that same realm has to be the 2017 game against TCU, Herman's first year.
I was there for that TCU game, and I just got to say, that game felt like we never had a chance. Like, Shane was playing behind a terrible O-line. So, I don't know, that game felt like we just got choked out, but then again, so did this one, so who knows. It's definitely up there, one of the worst. I'd put those two and the OU game this year as being like the worst losses, even more so than the Maryland games, because the Maryland games I never felt like we didn't have a chance, but those it felt like we were just getting pushed around and dominated. So
yeah, the Maryland ones were like those were disappointing, just based on the fact that we were, in both cases, expecting to come out and basically run roughshod and ended up in a game and losing a game. OU this year, even though the margin didn't really reflect it, that TCU game and this one, for just feeling like nearly from basically our first drive, just feeling like we lost the game. We were going to have to change, like we were going to have to pull off a miracle adjustment to have made it competitive. And instead, we just sort of kept sputtering along with the same issues that plagued us right from the start. And it seemed like the biggest thing, it felt like the Iowa State game, at least for our offense, basically the entire game.
For Iowa State, it at least felt like we made the adjustment, even though we decided not to stick with it when it really counted.
Right. Well, I was going to say, like, the Iowa State game, like, we made the adjustment very late, but that adjustment did come. But that first half of that Iowa State game just felt like Iowa State knew every single play that was coming. And I think that's what really plagued us in this game, was that it seemed like Baylor knew exactly where everyone was going to be. They knew every play call because it was that predictable. It was that obvious. And not just for Baylor. I think most of us, even the more casual fans who aren't super well-versed in sort of just that level of football play calling theory and sequencing, for the most part, everyone's sitting there going, all right, well, we're going to run it to the right, or it's going to go up the middle, or we're going to chuck it down the sideline. There just wasn't a whole lot of variety. We didn't take a whole lot of chances, and Baylor was never confused outside of thinking they were going to halftime and Keontae Ingram catching them off guard with a big run right before halftime.
Yeah, I mean, that Keontae saved us from the first like half shutout, I think, of the Tom Herman era, right? We haven't been shut out for an entire half.
I don't believe so.
Yeah, so, I mean, I agree with you. Offense is way too predictable. I actually posted some stats. I did a little rundown on Twitter. So if you look at our games divided by whether we've played that coach before versus whether we've not played the opposing head coach before, against first-time head coaches, like first-year head coaches, or Ed Orgeron, it's our first time playing him, we're averaging 4.88 yards per carry. Whereas if you then look at the games in which we're playing somebody that we have previously played, so like Lincoln Riley, Matt Rhule, Gundy, Patterson, we're averaging 4.12. And there is a difference. I do want to say that there's a big difference. Like, generally, the teams with returning head coaches have a better run defense. But like, I definitely think that at least speaks somewhat to the fact that teams are starting to catch on in year three under Herman, that we aren't going to adjust and that we're still running the same thing. And at that point, like, you're making your own job so much harder if you're Tom Herman, if other coaches are realizing that and you're not adjusting.
Yeah, and I think Scipio Tex did a pretty good write-up. I don't know if it was on Inside Texas, because I don't actually make mental notes of that exact thing, but he did a good write-up where he was talking about a lot of these formations, a lot of these plays are 100% identical to what we ran against LSU. So it's effective when it's against LSU because no one else has seen this yet. But once you put that kind of stuff on film, you can't just keep running those same things. And that's why you have to evolve the offense throughout the year, whether that's bringing in new formations or sort of riffing off on the play call, changing some of the ways that the receivers can attack the route, changing the route trees on certain plays, giving different looks with misdirection. These are the things that you need to evolve over time. You don't create your entire offense in the off season and then run with that the entire rest of the year. I mean, you're going to have an area of that playbook that's going to be your bread and butter, that's going to be generally untouched. But you need to have all this window dressing to keep the defense honest. If you're just going to do what we do, which is basically stick with that, like, this is what we know we can run, and never really branch out outside of weird trick plays here and there, maybe twice a game, you're going to end up in a lot of these situations. And it doesn't even need to be a great defense like the one Baylor has this year. They've got a very good defense. So we don't want to take away too much from Baylor. But, I mean, when we make it that easy for them, it's no surprise that they can come out and just smother us when nothing surprises them.
With Turkey Day coming up, I kind of have a little bit of an analogy here just to, I think, kind of emphasize the point. I know we've talked about it a little bit here, so I don't want to go too long. But so
I'm a big fan of the metaphors, so, okay. I'm waiting with bated breath.
All right, great. So every Thanksgiving, you cook a turkey, right? Your first year, the turkey, I mean, turkeys are hard to cook. You got to do a lot of prep. You got to get them for the right amount of time, right temperature and everything. I mean, not super difficult, but like there's a little bit of nuance to it. So first year, it comes out dry, it comes out overcooked. It's just not that good. So the next year, you're like, you know what? I need to bring it out sooner, so you do. And then the third year, even though you're only cooking this turkey once a year, every year you're getting better. The third year, you start putting the stuffing in, or you're basting the turkey or whatever. And so it's the same thing with these defenses that are seeing the same offense every year, where they're not even having to like adapt what they're doing. They're just able to like better learn the tendencies and do a better installation of the same thing year after year. So that's kind of my analogy for understanding like what kind of impact that can have for a defensive coordinator that's game planning against this. I mean, Herman would probably call it reliable. We can call it predictable offense.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is these past few weeks, basically outside of the Kansas game, dating back to the OU game, these things that Herman might call reliable are anything but reliable. They're consistently getting shut down. The little things that were working for us, putting Devin Duvernay on a bubble screen, like we were able to work against LSU and Rice, those things were reliable then, but they haven't been reliable for basically the last 2 months. And the fact that we continue to treat them like they are working is completely maddening. And it's even more maddening when you have Herman come out during this Monday press conference that he had and say that they felt like they had a good game plan for Baylor. When it seems like the plan itself doesn't seem to be any different than the ones that we've rolled out the last 3 weeks, and just sort of hoping that we can get enough out of these few plays that we feel like we can run and to just act like we had a good plan. We thought we had a good plan anyway, when we're not changing anything. I just don't know. I really don't know what the coaching staff expects if they're making so few changes, or if they are making some changes. I'd love to know what they think they're changing, because to the untrained eye, it looks like nothing is different.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to see an example of keeping your core identity but changing the offense, just look north. Just look at Norman, Oklahoma, Lincoln Riley. Again, I think he's the best offensive mind in football at any level. And for the third straight year, many of their core concepts are the same, but their offense is drastically different, right? With Baker Mayfield, it was a lot of spread, but still the same power concepts in the run game. Last year, it was, I mean, still spread, but a lot more option elements with Kyler Murray, QB run. Whereas this year, so I saw this thing, Mike Gundy, he was asked about Lincoln Riley's offense, and he said that this year they're basically just running the wishbone out of the shotgun. So, I mean, Riley's completely revolutionized his offense, but a lot of their core concepts are the same. But the thing is, like you said earlier, the window dressing is different, so defenses are having to adjust and having to stay honest, and they can't hone in on a couple, like on this very base set of plays, or else they're going to give up something else. So anyway,
yeah, OU this year is basically like anyone who's ever watched the service academies and thought, huh, I wonder what would happen if you ran those sort of ideas, that triple option with better athletes, what you would get. What you get is basically this year's OU offense.
And I mean, it's great. It's one of the best offenses in college football. So,
unfortunately.
Yeah. So to finish up with the offense kind of here, I want to know your opinion, because I don't really have a strong take on this, but I've seen a lot of people talking about it. Do you have an issue with the offense scoring late? You know, we were down 21, and then with 5 seconds left, take the timeout and score a touchdown.
I can understand philosophically this sort of attitude of play to the last, play to the whistle, basically. Play out the whole game. Don't sit there and take a knee. Don't just, like, do a lazy run the ball thing. I understand sort of the mentality of wanting to maintain that level of aggression that weirdly it felt like we didn't display the entire rest of the game. Felt like we did this whole thing backwards. We were aggressive in that last 3 minutes, but we weren't aggressive at any other point during the game. So I guess in practice, I don't really have a problem with it. I felt like it was, from a fan's perspective, it's completely pointless, and all it does is basically turn this from being, by point spread, the worst game of the Tom Herman era to the second worst game of the Tom Herman era. But I mean, I'm not upset about it. I can understand there are probably some salty Baylor fans, but I mean, they're going to be salty about anything that happens against Texas. So I don't have a problem with it, and I can see why a coach would want to emphasize that.
Yeah. That's pretty much where I'm at. My bigger issue is why Sam was in the game when we're down 3 scores and there's less than a minute left. Like, get him out of there.
I mean, I think it all comes back to that not just going to throw in the towel thing. You're going to be aggressive. It'd be one thing if we were up by 3 scores. Then, I mean, yeah, at that point, it's irresponsible. And, I mean, there's still a strong argument to be made that this was irresponsible. But you also can't sell the idea of being aggressive until the end, fighting all the way through to the end, if the coach is also simultaneously going to pull the starting quarterback. I feel like that message gets lost. If you're saying, yeah, keep trying like it's a regular game, but Sam's going to be on the bench. I can understand why you would avoid doing that as a head coach, just because it would mix your signals that you're sending to the team by executing like that.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I understand. I just, you know, this offense is already bad. I don't want to see what it would be like without Sam Ellinger out there. And we weren't going to win the game. So in my mind, pull him. But I mean, I can at least definitely understand the point. But
yeah, it could just be another one of those little things where Herman can be very arrogant and a little bit, I mean, just does things out of some weird, like, dedication to culture that at the same time just defy common logic. So I'm not gonna fault anyone who was frustrated by us risking Sam in that situation, but at the same time I get it. But yeah, I in the end, personally, I don't have a problem with it. Whatever, you can just give Baylor fans something to be needled about.
Well, speaking of defying logic, let's talk about the defense.
Yeah, I mean, for what felt like basically the entire first half of the year, it felt like the problem was the defense. The offense through the first 5 games ran well enough, and the defense is what gave everyone heart palpitations. But basically since the TCU game, well, since the Kansas game, I should be more specific, since that Kansas game, really the last 3 weeks, the defense has played, I'm not going to try and tell you it's elite by any stretch of the imagination, and I wouldn't call it great and possibly not even good, but certainly good enough to win these games, especially when you're playing in the Big 12 and with the offense that we had to start the year. Todd Orlando has made adjustments enough. There's still a lot of areas that we have problems, but he's made enough adjustments to where the defense is able to make some plays and occasionally stop people.
Orlando is starting to get a little bit of a pass, which I still disagree with, and that's also part of the reason that, like, that transition, I'm like, speaking of defying logic, like, I don't get how our defense is playing so well given the play calling, because I still think that Orlando is the same guy he was a month ago and 2 months ago. But I think that our defense is so talented that they make up for it. And I also think that part of it is just that the teams that we're facing don't have the skill talent to take advantage. I mean, obviously Baylor had Denzel Mims and he kind of popped off. Kansas State didn't really have anybody great. Iowa State was at least better, but we still saw Kohler make a couple really big plays at the tight end position, as well as their running back had a great first half. But I think that if we were to play like Oklahoma or LSU again tomorrow, they would do just as well as they did in our first meeting. I don't think there's been any real improvement outside of just having our talented players back and them actually being healthy and not having to sit out of the game. So I don't know. I still haven't come around.
It's enough to where you can sort of see what Orlando's thinking was when he sort of developed what the identity of this team was going to be in the off season. These were the level of athletes he was expecting to have for the most part the whole season. Like, yes, injuries are going to happen to everyone, and everyone deals with injuries. But to have that level of focused injuries, especially in the secondary, which was supposed to be really the deepest part of our team, you can understand why things fall apart. Like, yeah, sure, our number one guy wasn't playing, and you can expect that the number two guy is going to be able to play at a similar level. He's not going to have that same top end, but for the most part, you're going to be able to maintain. But once you start getting into the point where we are legitimately playing third string and walk-on players because we have so many injuries in the secondary, you can understand why these things break down. And I think that's another thing. A lot of Texas fans still have this mentality that we keep trying to shake this from the fan base, but there's still a ton of fans that just look at it and go, well, we're Texas, so our scout team should still be better than Kansas's first team, which I think is the level of arrogance that makes it so easy for the rest of the college football world to hate a lot of Texas fans. But yes, there are still a lot of problems with the way Todd Orlando is developing this defense now and calling plays for this defense. They aren't necessarily in a position to succeed. They're just athletic enough to hide those deficiencies in the actual play calls.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that, I mean, so my point is exactly what you just said, right? Like, I think that the play calling is still poor. I think a lot of the concepts we run are ill-timed, at least whenever they're actually like implemented. I don't think that we're particularly well coached. We don't know how to blitz properly. We don't set the edge properly. And we put our guys in really poor positions. But the counterpoint, of course, is that, hey, we're holding these teams like Baylor, Iowa State, and Kansas State to, what, like 24 points maybe on average. And so if you have the personnel to do all those things, then like if you have the personnel to run your safety on a blitz from 7 yards deep, then why not? Like, if you have the talent to not get burned by that, then why not? Why does it matter? So, I mean, I guess that is the counterpoint. It's like, well, if the players are good enough, then just do whatever you want. And like, I'm kind of being sarcastic here.
Right. But, yeah. I think part of this is,
like, I do at least understand
is sort of a
that.
Symptom of, yeah, I think some of this is a symptom of Herman's sort of mantra where he talks a lot about playing complementary football. And it feels like that's what's sort of afflicting the defense, is that the focus is not on playing excellent defense. The focus is on playing defense that's good enough. The offense is going to be able to do enough, or we're going to do enough to where our offense can win this game, where it seems like the team is treating it that level of complimentary. It's not about shutting down the opposing offense. It's about slowing them enough to where our offense can outdo them. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that might be the just overall mentality that's harming this defense, is that focus isn't on being individually great. It's about being good enough given what you believe you have on the other side of the ball.
I think that's a really interesting point because, I mean, Orlando seems content to try to make plays on defense, you know, because you don't blitz from your secondary if you're not trying to force a negative play. And so if you look at it from the perspective of, we just need to force some, like, long distance downs, or we just need to get them off the field so it doesn't matter if we give up a 30-yard play here as long as they don't score, then that makes a lot of sense. But we're not playing good complementary football. Like, last year, whenever the defense struggled, the offense typically stepped up, and vice versa. This year, it's like, well, the defense is getting better, but the offense is just horrific. And like, oh, well, the offense is doing really well, but the defense is just horrific. So, yeah, there's definitely a lack of that complementary football. So I can definitely see where you're going with it.
With that, let's turn it over to our listener voicemail. The hot take line. Had a few call-ins actually this week, and had two of them that I really wanted to play for you guys, just because given the timing of when they came in, felt like it pretty well matched the timing that, or sort of the thought process that the general Texas fan base at large, I think, devolved into. So let's listen to this first one. Got Rodney from San Angelo.
Hey, yeah, this is Rodney from San Angelo, Texas. Lifetime Longhorn fan. Love your podcast. It's kind of a response to Zach and his craziness about two things, Willie Taggart and getting our teeth kicked in. That's not going to happen. If Tom does not make moves in the offseason with his staff, his team that's around him, that all should be coaching at Rice and not at Texas, then maybe he gets fired. But obviously the Willie Taggart style of coaching isn't going to work in Texas, and he's not going to be an option. They're going to stick with Tom, but if he chooses to stick with his staff, I give him one more season. Doing a great job. Love the podcast. Good morning.
Thank you, Rodney, for that call. Definitely appreciate it. Next up, we had Keith from Houston.
This is Keith out here in Houston, Texas. I've been fuming for the past few days after that performance in Baylor. And my hot take is that we're going to lose out, which really isn't even a hot take anymore. It's just a pretty much well-known now. And that Tom Herman and all the assistants will be fired, clean house, and we're going to throw a lot of money at Matt Rhule and tell him, hey, come on down. Cook him.
All right. So, I mean, we got two takes, basically, about the coaching staff. Rodney from San Angelo, Keith from Houston. Thank you guys, both of you guys, for calling in. We appreciate all the voicemails. If you in the future want to give us a call, call us at 512-655-9038. Let us know your hot take on the hot take line. But let's kind of talk about these. This leads into where we were wanting to go with this episode anyway, talking about the coaching staff. But you have Rodney, who's a little more calm because he called on Friday, or actually Thursday morning, right after we released our podcast. So he doesn't have the hate in his heart of a Baylor loss, whereas Keith from Houston, obviously calling in after the Baylor game, very frustrated. I mean, it just shows the level of annoyed that we could get. Like, yeah, we lost the Iowa State game. That's frustrating. But, I mean, we can make some changes and we can get through this Baylor game and we'll be okay and just get to the offseason and make some changes. And now we're at the point where it's like everything is just going wrong. We got Keith out here calling us saying we're gonna lose out, and I mean, either of us. Yeah, it's well known, and we were talking even before we got recording, and we obviously haven't gotten to the point where we're gonna make our official predictions yet. But we both agree, like the fan in us and the realist in us thinks it's gonna be a sloppy win, but the pessimists in us are all screaming that we're gonna lose and it could be a bad loss again. Mm-hmm. And just losing the Tech at all, really, on Black Friday is going to feel like a bad loss, regardless of how big the margin is.
Well, I do love that these two guys called in, one before the game and one after, because they really do like encapsulate my thoughts on Tom Herman. Because I've been a huge Herman supporter. I still am to an extent. You know, we're just going to go, I guess, position by position here and talk about back or not back, whether we would bring back each coach.
Yeah. Yeah, so, well, just to sort of make sure everyone else understands, what we're going to do here, we're going to go through every single member of this coaching staff, at least the Herman and the 10 assistant coaches, and effectively do smash or pass. We're just going to call it Texas is back, Texas is not back. Coaches that we think are going to return next season, coaches that we think aren't going to return, but also at the same time, I'm going to go through and ask Noah and see if Noah wants them back, and then whether or not he thinks they'll be back.
And there are a lot of things that I really like about Tom Herman. I think a lot of his culture, I think a lot of his basic principles about football are good. You know, like the having a tough culture, like his press conference today, he was like, well, it's my job to protect the culture, not feelings. I think all that is good and all that can work. But I don't think that he's done a good job of creating an environment where all those things can succeed with his players. I think he's not bringing up enough of the love part of the tough love. So it seems like he's kind of lost the locker room here. And at that point, I kind of think that that's when you have to say not back. Because next year, the team is going to be so talented. You know, how I just talked about how, like, I think that the talent on defense is really making up for poor coaching and poor play calling there. So, like, next year, that defense is only going to be more mature and theoretically better developed because they'll be here next year. We're not losing that many starters off the defense. And we're going to have Sam Ellinger, senior quarterback. Those two things don't line up very often. So I really think that you have to protect your title windows and you have to be aggressive about capitalizing on them. And so that's ultimately the reason that I would say don't bring Herman back. You know, if I had $20 million to pay his buyout, just because I think that it's such a big year for us to capitalize on. But I still think he'll be successful at the college level. I just don't know that it'll be here.
Yeah. So obviously you're saying you wouldn't want Herman back this year, but we all know and everyone knows, I think we all agree, Herman's not going anywhere after this season.
Yeah, I agree.
It would take getting nuked off the face of the earth in both this Tech game and the bowl game for Herman to get removed himself.
Yeah, I could definitely see a scenario if we lost out where he wasn't brought back, but I think the most likely scenario is following the Texas Tech loss, we'll see a couple of assistants go, but Herman will remain.
All right, so let's go through those assistants. We'll start on the offensive side of the ball. We have offensive coordinator, really in name only, and quarterback's coach, Tim Beck. Do you want him back, and do you think he'll be back?
Well, I've been really high on Beck because I think he's a great recruiter, and I think that he deserves at least some credit for developing Sam. But all that is based on the fact that Herman was calling plays, and Herman seemed like a good play caller. If your head coach can call plays, you don't need your coordinator to be a play caller. But since apparently the head coach can't call plays, then we need an offensive coordinator that can. So I wouldn't bring back Tim Beck at this point, even though I think that he really has like exceeded all expectations that I had for him as a recruiter. I'd love to keep him somewhere else on the staff. Like, spoiler alert, Derek Wareheim, if he's let go at tight end, then yeah, I'd love to have him there. But even though I think Herman probably will bring him back, I personally wouldn't.
You think Tim Beck is coming back?
Yeah, I kind of think so. But that one's kind of a toss-up for me.
Yeah, I think this one, I would have said going into this game, I would have expected Tim Beck would be back. The way this Baylor game went, I feel like that's definitely, yeah, come a toss-up, really a coin flip on that one, could go either way.
And I think it really depends on how much control of the offense Herman wants. Like, if Herman decides that he thinks it's best to go in an entirely new direction and go outside of his coaching tree to get an offensive coordinator, then I think he'll hire somebody else. But if he's, at the end of the season, he says, you know what, we're right. Like, if he really does think that their game plans have been great, then there's no reason to make a change because your game plans are already great. But if he's like, you know what, we should spread it out, then that's when you make a change. So it just depends on what Herman wants.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think at this point we can basically accept. We saw it with Major Applewhite in Houston, too. They are going to run Herman's offense. That's what it's going to be. And I think most of us can understand that the problems with this offense are not because of the version of offense that we're running. It is the play calling. It's the execution of that game plan. Not just by the players, but by the coaches too. You have to be able to execute with play calls to help your players be able to execute the plays themselves. I don't think the issue is that we want to be a power run spread team. That's not where our issue is. We're not going to need to do a huge switch to a big air raid to make this work. This scheme can work. You see it at Ohio State. That's more or less the same scheme that we're running here. You see it at Florida. I mean, with Dan Mullen. Dan Mullen is running a scheme that is nearly identical to what we want to be, and they have Kyle Trask, who is maybe a tenth the quarterback that Sam Ellinger is, and yet their offense is more effective than ours. So I would say if Tim Beck is back, we need to make a lot of corrections, at least as far as the actual play calling process. Because even though Herman ends up being primary play caller in this, from the way he has described it in press conferences, there are several people giving input. It's Merringer is giving input. Beck is giving input. Herb Hand has a say in the play call. I think Stan Drayton, by way of being associate head coach, he has some something to say about what the play call is, and then Herman makes his decision from there. I think if we're going to keep Tim Beck around and keep Herman as the primary play caller, we have to pull out the number of people who have an influence in that play call. I think we're in a situation where there's too many cooks, and you're not letting Herman really truly call the game when there's all these voices saying different things and confusing the whole process, I think. But speaking of Stan Drayton, do you think he's back, and do you want him back?
I think Drayton's back, and I would probably bring him back. I mean, part of that's because, like, I don't know a better running back coach than Stan Drayton. You know, his results so far have been mixed, but I do think that Keontae has actually gotten a lot better over the course of the season. I even liked what I saw from him against Iowa State, even though our running game was really ineffective. You know, when he wasn't getting hit 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage, I liked what I saw from Keontae. I think that you have to give Drayton at least some credit for the fact that Rashawn Johnson came in and filled in as admirably as he did. And then, of course, we currently have a pledge from Bijan Robinson, and I don't think that we keep him if you fire Drayton. And it's never good to say, oh, well, it's never good to base personnel decisions on one recruit, but I would still keep Drayton just because I think that he's done a good enough job to keep his job. And, you know, at that point, that's more than you can say for a lot of the staff.
Okay, well, let's throw in, rather than the angle of firing Drayton means we lose Bijan Robinson, there's been a lot of rumors and a lot of discussion about how solid a commit Bijan Robinson is. If Bijan Robinson decommits and switches to USC or Ohio State or whoever it's going to be, then do you keep Stan Drayton?
Yeah. Sorry.
If he loses Bijan Robinson, would you keep Stan Drayton still?
I would. I'm glad that you asked to clarify that, because I wasn't saying keep Drayton because of Bijan. I was just saying, like, he finally has that big recruiting win, and I think that the recruiting win had been one of the bigger gripes about him. But I do still think that, like, our running backs are not the issue currently in my mind. So yeah, I think he's done good enough to stay, and he has a really good history, which, I mean, history only means so much, but it's something for the decision making process.
All right, next coach we got, it's going to be O-line coach and co-offensive coordinator Herb Hand. The offensive line started this year very promising, had a great game against LSU, really were good up through about the West Virginia game, and boy, did the wheels come off, and it feels like we are no better than we were in the first year with Herman, with Derek Wareheim these past several games.
It's shockingly rough, because it really did feel like the first fourth of the season, it's like, oh, this is the best offensive line we've had since 2008 or 2007 or whatever it was. And it was like, oh, well, I guess we're just average again for the second straight year. And now it's like, oh, this is 2017 levels of disaster, like you were saying. So, I mean, I don't really know what to make of Herb Hand at this point, but I would keep him. He brought him on for several years. This is year two. Yeah, despite the regression, I would keep Herb Hand for another year.
Next up, we have the official punching bag of the podcast. Tight ends coach, special team coordinator, not really good at anything, Derek Wareheim. I mean, I'll answer this one.
I was going to let you have this one.
We don't want him back. We don't want him back. We definitely don't want him back. Do I think he will be back? I think is a totally different question. And it worries me, because I see a lot of Texas fans talk about it like it's a foregone conclusion, usually in the same breath as Merringer. Merringer and Wareheim are both gone. But I feel like of all of the assistant coaches that get talked about as getting fired in a more official capacity, if you can consider the 995 crowd official, I feel like Wareheim's name doesn't pop up on their radar as much as it does on my radar. And I feel like a lot of our listeners reflect that same sort of radar of just intense hate for Derek Wareheim. So I can't tell how much of the clamoring about Derek Wareheim getting fired is real and how much of it is basically feeling like we just memed it into existence. And I'm hoping we can meme it sort of the way that we in our sort of circle of people that we talk to regularly about Texas football sort of memed our way into getting Brew McCoy to transfer here and accidentally screwed up our memes and sent him back to USC. But it feels like it's something that we just sort of spoke into existence, but I don't actually know if there's any substance to it. So I honestly don't know if he's coming back. I have made it very clear that I hope he's not back, but at this point, I really don't know if he will be.
I think you're safe. I think he is not going to be retained. Yeah, I don't think so. I think that, I mean, I hope that because Herman's offense is so reliant on a tight end, he'll see that our tight ends are not currently being developed and Wareheim doesn't bring any other strengths to the table. And I also think that tight end is a position where you can dump ineffective coaches if they bring other off-field positives. So, for example, Tim Beck, if he were to be put at tight end, I think that that's a really big deal. Or Corby Meekins, I might not bring him back, but if Herman wants him back, you can put him at tight end and bring on a real wide receiver coach. So regardless, I think you'll
right.
Be happy.
So, I mean, you bring up Corby Meekins. Let's just start talking Corby Meekins. Currently inside wide receiver coach, his first year with Herman at Texas, he was the tight ends coach. So do you think he's back? Do you want him back? And I guess throw in that wrinkle of it sounds like you would want him back if he was sort of sliding over to that tight ends role back to where he was in year one. No,
I would not bring Corby Meekins back. I haven't really seen anything from Meekins that makes me want to bring him back. And I say that fully acknowledging the fact that little Jordan Humphrey and Devin Duvernay have had incredible years the last 2 years inside wide receiver. I think a lot of that is the product of Herman's offense. I think it's very slot friendly. But yeah, no, the reason I brought up that as an example is because I could totally see him being a guy that survives the purge and that Herman wants to keep around. And since he was at tight end his first year, I could see him slotting back into that. So I think it's a toss-up on whether he's actually retained or not. But personally, I think we could do better than Corby Meekins at wide receiver or tight end.
I feel like I just like him a little bit more, probably just because of what followed. I feel like our tight end play was so much better. Guys like Cade Brewer were so much better that first year where Corby was the one coaching the tight ends. And then when you have Derek Wareheim, who is like the opposite of the Midas touch for anything. It wouldn't surprise me just with that comparison and knowing Herman's looking at this same comparison. If Wareheim's gone, it would not surprise me to see Meekins stick around but get sent back to tight end.
Yeah, and that's a fair point about, I mean, Brewer was like a pretty average tight end his freshman year, which is like not bad for a true freshman. And
a two-point conversion against USC. Yeah. That he had no business really being on the field for in the first place, and we were able to execute with a true freshman well enough to be in that game.
Yeah.
All right, next up we have outside receivers coach, and I believe also passing game coordinator, the not-so-honorable Drew Maringer. I feel like this is the name that comes up most consistently with the 995ers as being the most sure of all the assistants that he won't be retained.
Yeah, and that's I mean, it's for good reason. And it doesn't really have that much to do with the on-the-field product of the wide receivers, even though I think that the receivers are definitely an underperforming group this year. I think that has been especially apparent with Colin Johnson being out for a lot of the time. But I think that the reasons that he's going to be gone extend far beyond play of his like unit on the field. So he's a guy that I would definitely say I would not bring back. And I very much feel that Herman agrees.
Yeah, it feels like basically since Maringer has gotten here, the story of the wide receiver room has been just constant turmoil. You had guys like Reggie Hemphill, who admittedly never found a landing place, so a lot of people are quick to dismiss that as being a Maringer problem, but more or less got run out the door by Maringer. Lil Jordan Humphrey nearly got run out the door after 2017. Came back in 2018 to do enough to get himself drafted or not drafted, thought he was going to get drafted, but he got out basically as soon as he felt like he had a real opportunity again because of Drew Maringer. And the turmoil I feel like we're getting this year with guys like Brennan Eagles comes down to that turmoil that is created by Drew Maringer's existence as the receivers coach. Sliding over to the other side of the ball, defensive coordinator linebackers coach Todd Orlando. I feel like this is another one where there might be a legitimate difference between what we want and what we think is actually going to happen.
I agree, because I don't want Orlando brought back, and I realize that the fan base is cooling on Orlando right now. Like, a lot of people are saying, hey, the defense has been really good the last three games. Like, let's bring back Orlando. He seems to have improved or whatever. I disagree, but I think that Herman thinks the same thing, so I think we'll have Todd Orlando back. Really, I think both of our coordinators will be back, most likely.
I think it's a very high possibility, or very real possibility that Todd Orlando returns. partially because he's one of the only, him and Herb Hand are the only assistants that are not on a one-year deal, so they don't expire this year, I don't believe.
I think the two coordinators and Herb Hand both have deals that run past this year.
Okay. But yeah, and then on top of that, Herman's going to go, look, the heart of our defensive problems this year was injuries and just an exorbitant number of injuries in our secondary. So I think that's what's going to be the saving grace for Todd Orlando, at least in Herman's eyes, is it's going to be, hey, there were injuries, but we'll show you next year when we've got all these guys healthy and another year in the system that we can get back to the defense that we had in 2017.
Yeah, and I mean, that 2017 defense is definitely like a beacon of hope, and I think that it does show what his ceiling can be. So I'm not in any way saying it's like impossible for Orlando to come back and for us to have an elite defense next year. The talent will be there, and I could totally see that happening. I just don't trust it to actually happen. But yeah, looking at the contracts, Beck and Orlando both run through March 2020, whereas Hand goes through March 2021.
All right, next up we got cornerbacks coach Jason Washington. I would say that if I had to pick one unit on the defense that has shown growth through the years, or through this season, I would personally say that the cornerbacks have shown more growth than they're really getting credit for. I feel like their ability to play press coverage, man coverage, and really be present in the wake of losing a guy like Chris Boyd, where so many of us were used to seeing him like three steps behind the receiver and trying to just use his athleticism to catch back up. I've been like, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Jalen Green, Anthony Cook, Deshaun Jameson have all been elite this year, because they haven't been. But I feel like they've gotten significantly better from what we saw out of them against LSU. There's a lot of holes in the secondary, but I feel like the cornerbacks are actually pretty reliable. But do you think he's back, and do you want him to come back?
I'd guess that he will be brought back next year. And I agree that corner is, I share the opinion that they're probably the most improved unit this season. I still kind of have, I don't think that they're really all that technically sound. And it's difficult to say because I think that our corners aren't utilized properly a lot of times. So I don't know if that's Orlando or if it's Jason Washington that's telling them to play 10 yards off the line of scrimmage all the time, you know. So I can't really separate how much of the blame to put on Washington versus just how the game plan is formulated. But I don't know. I'm not convinced. I probably wouldn't bring Washington back. So I'll go ahead and bring up Navar too, because in my mind, Washington and Navar are kind of the same, and that I really like both of them. But I also don't think that our play this year from their units reflects really good coaching. Even though both of those units have improved, I don't know. I'm still hesitant to actually give them credit, which is a weird thing to say, but whatever.
Yeah, so sounds like you don't want Craig Navar back, who is safeties and co-defensive coordinator.
Yeah, and part of it,
a title he picked up this past season, and I think really that co-defensive coordinator tag is what's going to, even if a lot of people are clamoring for him to not be back, that new tag is going to be what keeps him around. Is if we're keeping Orlando, Herman wants to keep that tag on Navar if he's expected to be sort of the replacement for whenever Todd Orlando does move on. I would say that designation is what ultimately protects Craig Navar more than anything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so part of the reason that I do expect both of them to be brought back, I think that we'll kind of just run it back with the entire defensive staff. But I think that like those skill positions, like wide receiver, running back, and the secondary, are probably the places where there's the most coaching talent available, which is kind of playing into personally, I think that we can do better than Jason Washington or Craig Navar. That's not to say that they're bad coaches, but I think that there are a lot of good coaches out there.
Yeah, and I guess you sort of yada-yadded him, but the man, the myth, the legend, defensive line coach Oscar Giles, you said you're expecting them to run it back with the defensive staff, so I take it that means you want and expect Oscar Giles to return.
Yeah, and so the funniest part of all this is, let's say in May or early June, when our fan base and the people that follow the team and recruiting really closely were at their absolute peak meltdown of the summer, of the off season, if you had said that of the seven assistant coaches that are on one-year contracts, that the two that I would choose to bring back were Stan Drayton and Oscar Giles, I would not have believed you. I would have thought you were crazy. But that's where we're at. Like, life life hits you fast. That's all I can say. I think that Giles and Drayden...
life comes at you fast.
Yeah, I think they've done a good enough job as coaches. Their units have not been our weaknesses this year. And, you know, they both seem to have actually stumbled into some success on the recruiting trail. So, yeah, those two are my picks to bring back from the seven assistant coaches.
Yeah, I would say personally, just for the staff overall, I'm not expecting wholesale changes. I don't think you're going to see both coordinators gone. You might see one of them depart. Or, I mean, could be the situation where Tim Beck gets knocked back from offensive coordinator and shifted around. But personally, I mean, if I was trying to set lines, I would say number of position or number of coaches that are updating their LinkedIn status for Texas next season or in this offseason, I would put it about 3.5. And I think the majority of those are coming on the offensive side of the ball. As mind-boggling as that would have been early in the year to say that our biggest changes were going to be on the offensive side of the ball, I expect that's where the majority of that work is going to happen. Guys like Maringer, Meekins, Wareheim, and then I would probably expect Drayton to be the next one that would get moved around. If nothing else, if you do go for the three with Wareheim, Meekins, Maringer, I would hope to help the defense's issues that you would slide one of those over, rebalance the staff like Texas fans have been clamoring the whole time. We've got, with Herman, effectively 11 coaches. Tom Herman, the head coach, and 10 assistant coaches. Right now we have 7 guys coaching the offense and only 4 coaching the defense. When you have an offensive-minded head coach, you should not be shorthanding your defensive staff.
That's ridiculous.
So it really should get a balance where it's, I mean, if you're going to always count Herman, there's always going to be unbalance somewhere with an uneven number. But rather than have this 7-4 matchup, you'd want to go 6-5, stop separating your inside and outside wide receivers, or stop separating inside wide receivers and tight ends, however you want to do that division. But basically, the fact that we have a tight end coach, an inside wide receiver coach, and an outside wide receiver coach, you combine 2 of those together and you shift that newfound spot over to the defense, whether that's an outside linebackers coach, a defensive tackles coach, whatever. That's where I think you get your improvement in the defensive staff, as you bring in some new blood that way, and then you do turn over tight end and wide receiver coach to David Beatty or
Samples.
Maybe more of a stretch might be reaching back up to SMU and get Rashad Samples right back after his year off hanging out up in University Park there.
Yeah. I mean, Samples is the first guy that I'm calling if I'm Herman, but, you know, I'm not Herman, so we'll see what happens. But yeah, 100%, like, you need to balance that out. It doesn't make sense. And the defense was the weakness last year, right? So I don't know, but
I mean, yeah. But so with that, for all this talk about what happened with Baylor and all this talk about the offseason already, there is a reminder, we do actually still have one more game in the regular season, never mind the bowl game. We're playing Black Friday. I think it's an 11 a.m. kick from DKR. So senior day, playing against Texas Tech. In-state rivalry, and I know me calling it a rivalry is going to make a lot of Texas fans cringe because there's this aspect of it where a lot of people, for whatever reason, just don't want to acknowledge that there is more than a regular game importance with Texas Tech. I mean, we literally have a trophy, even if it is a small-time trophy with the Chancellor Spurs. But really, anytime there is an in-state game, there is an aspect of that to which it is a rivalry. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to tell you that it's bigger than that. I'm not going to tell you that it's bigger than the A&M game, and especially not the OU game, or even historically bigger than Arkansas, but it is a rivalry. It is a smaller rivalry, yes, but it is a rivalry being an in-state game. But playing Texas Tech, and honestly, it's been such a beating this year that I think both of us kind of don't really know shit about Texas Tech.
It's been a rough go. Yeah, we're definitely not as motivated to do a ton of thorough oppo research. I know that they just lost their ability to get bowl eligible. They're now 4-7, so they don't have that to play for. You know, Matt Wells came in, and well, I'll go and just give my prediction. I'm taking 34-30 Texas. I know that saying that we're going to score 34 points is a bit of a stretch to many people, but between the fact that it's a new head coach at Tech, their run defense is ranked number 74 in the country just by pure yardage, I think their S&P plus defense puts them somewhere in like the low 40s or something like that. So basically not a very good defense, and we've been able to actually move the ball against defenses that aren't great. It's just anytime we hit my confident defense that they've been able to slow us down. So I think that we'll be able to see a little bit more of what we saw earlier in the season, build on a little bit of momentum, headed into the bowl game and the off period. But and actually, they're number 76 on S&P Plus defense, so that's really not good. So I'm putting us at 34, but I also think that we might have a couple mistakes on defense and just that lack of complementary football, maybe a couple bad turnovers. So it'll still end up being a close game.
Yeah, I'm going to say it's going to be a close game. I think at this point, I think we should all just resign ourselves to anything around Thanksgiving is going to just be a sloppy game played by us. So I'm going 24-21 Texas. I'm going to say that the defense that these last 3 weeks, they're going to be able to maintain that sort of level of play. It's not the highest level play, but Tech is not the dangerous offense that they were with Cliff Kingsbury. I think Alan Bowman is still out. So it's still Jet Duffy, who last year kind of tore us up in Lubbock. But I think that the defense does enough. The offense continues to sort of sputter because I think Tech's defense is better than S&P Plus or SP Plus thinks it is. But yeah, 24-21, sloppy game. But the defense does enough to send the seniors out on a high note. But with that, since it is Thanksgiving week, and to avoid being too terribly negative, we wanted to take some time to really talk about the things that we were most thankful for during this Texas football season. So what do you got, Noah? Who are you? Who or what are you thankful for this year?
I am thankful for Sam Ellinger. I won't stand for the Sam slander that is currently happening in some portions of our fan base. I still think he's a great quarterback. I think there are many things that are limiting him and the offense, but he's still a top five player on the team. I still think he's really good. I think that we'll see him bounce back next year. And I think that generally he's been better than most of the other quarterbacks he played. So it's like, do you really, I don't know. This is a topic for another day, but I'm thankful for Sam.
For me, I've got my, my most thankful thing is just feeling really confident that we are out of the woods as far as having just messy athletic department and athletic director situations. Chris Del Cane has done an amazing job. I said in the last podcast that because of the way this football season has gone, that this offseason is what's going to ultimately define his tenure as the head man for the athletic department. But given everything about him, his responsiveness, his attitude, just the way he sort of carries himself and runs the department for Texas, I don't have a whole lot of fears that he's not going to do what needs to get done to help this football team get back to where it's supposed to be for next year. So I'm thankful for Chris Del Conte.
Mm-hmm. I'm also thankful for the recruits that have not yet left us. I kind of thought that the class would have been in shambles at this point, but for the most part, it's held down pretty well. We're still top 10 in 247s, like composite ratings or whatever. Most of the big ones really are still there. So I guess praise Milrow and be thankful for what we've got.
And then the player that I'm thankful for is going to be Devin Duvernay, a guy through last season that I was clamoring for getting more attention, just seemed to be not on the same page with Sam, or at least Sam was not on his page, because there were several times that Duvernay was open and Sam just straight up didn't see him. But yeah, Devin Duvernay, big senior year, moving to inside wide receiver, one of those guys who's really embodied sort of that selflessness, especially in the wide receiver room. You've got him, you've got Colin Johnson, and really with all the seniors, Colin Johnson, Devin Duvernay, Brandon Jones, guys who have been through some of the roughest parts of Texas football's history. And been there too. Would have been better if we had continued it this year, but got to see us get back to something important with that Sugar Bowl last year. So all those guys, even Kirk Johnson, who stuck with the program despite all of his injuries and everything like that, all those seniors, really, I'm thankful for them, and I hope that we do enough to make it so their last memory of playing at DKR is a winning memory.
Mm-hmm, for sure. That senior class is... There's a lot of great ambassadors for the school. So yeah, we definitely owe them some gratitude.
Yep. And I hope to see Devin Duvernay and Colin Johnson and Brandon Jones. I don't think Kirko is going to get there, but I hope at least those three are able to make some noise in the NFL.
Don't forget Roach.
Get some good news. Malcolm Roach. Roach, that's right.
Really good 4-3 DT.
Can't believe myself. Yeah, another captain. Really, I think one of two seniors that we're really not going to have back next year on the defense. So a lot better situation for the defense next year as far as losing talent and losing experience. But yeah, Malcolm Roach has been asked by this staff, by the previous staff, to play all over the field in the front seven, and he has always been a selfless guy. So yeah,
yeah, offsides is forgiven at this point. So
yeah, I mean, yeah, people are still going to be hostile about the Iowa State offsides thing, but
he's been good for us all year long. So
yeah, he has not been an area of concern for me, and I'm not going to let that one mistake tarnish the rest of his career or my memory of his career at Texas. But yeah, in the meantime, before this game next week, or this Friday, I guess, by the time you listen to this, it's probably only going to be about 2 days away. Follow us on Twitter at the FTH Podcast. Make sure you guys have a safe and happy Thanksgiving with family or friends or whoever you choose to spend your holiday with. We will see you next week with what is hopefully, please, please come back to being a positive breakdown where we can talk about a win, not a loss. That will be the thing that we will be most thankful for if that comes true. Hook 'em.